Welcome back for another episode with your internet historians. I'm Nicole.
I'm Lisa.
And I'm Alex.
What's up, everybody? How's it going? Long time no talk.
For real.
So what's going on with Marvel and the Kardashians?
Okay, guys. If you
always have plan on watching on these things.
Yeah. If you plan on watching Shang-Chi, you better go and watch Awkwafina is Nora from Queens, season 1, episode 8. Okay. I am giving you the inside scoop here, and do not chug a beer before you go and watch it because you miss out on a couple things.
I was drinking wine while I was watching it and eating.
I haven't watched it and I want to watch it. We just haven't made it a point to go to the movie.
Well, no, it's because you haven't watched Awkwafina is Nora from Queens season 1, episode 8.
Okay, I have to watch that first. Okay. I forgot, but I do want to see it.
In the wrong order.
Yeah.
It's very good. Highly recommend.
Yeah. Yes. That's what I've heard from like everybody. I just because I thought it was going to be on Disney Plus. We're like, oh, we're just going to.
I know. I thought the same thing. I was going to offer Alec money for it.
Yeah. And like, because this was during my Faye's birthday weekend thing or whatever. And so one of the nights we're like, let's all watch Shang-Chi. And then we were all gathered around. And that's when we all learned that it wasn't on Disney Plus. Yeah. And we
all went to bed really sad. I'm kind of like glad that he's at least going to make all the money from it, because you know the lawsuits that are happening right now, because they're saying like Scarlett's lawsuit is about the fact that she, I think they in the thing they were just saying she was going to make whatever money she gets that from the theater. They didn't say anything about Disney Plus, and they released it on both, and obviously the theater didn't make as much money. So at least for him, I don't know what he signed, but he obviously signed on before the pandemic. Yeah. So he probably got paid.
That's what I was kind of what thinking. He deserved. I was thinking that might have been why it didn't come out on Disney Plus, was that whole drama.
Oh, definitely. It was a freaking bad look, like on Disney's part. And then all that, like, and I don't particularly care for Scarlett Johansson too much, but I was 100% on her side. Same. And then the crap that Disney was saying about her, and like, they're pretty much like freaking slandering her that she wants money, even though we're in a pandemic. And oh my God, it's just like Disney, that's a bad look.
Yeah, it's like you pay what she's worth, you know, she. So I agree. I'm
well, and it's the contract. Hello.
Well, yeah, they obviously just did the loophole. But I was like, thinking Simu's Mandarin is actually really good. I was like watching this thing where they're talking about their Mandarin, and I was like, Simu, I didn't realize you speak Mandarin that well. But he was in Kim's Convenience, which is a Korean family, but I knew he was Chinese Canadian, but I wasn't sure about his background too much, because I know Awkwafina, she's technically a second. I don't know, it's kind of weird because her mom is a Korean immigrant, but her mom passed away when she was 4, so she was raised by her dad and her grandma, and her dad is first gen, so she's second. And so I think her Chinese is like not as good as Simu's, because she could speak English to her grandparents versus Simu had, I think he had to speak Chinese to them.
I feel like her Chinese isn't great.
Who's?
Like, this is in Awkwafina. I feel like this is like the second or third time she said that her Chinese isn't great. Like in a movie, she said it.
Well, she was in The Farewell, and her Chinese was actually pretty good in that movie. But I think it's okay, because the whole point was that she's this like American born Chinese, ABC guys, American born Chinese. Oh, dude, you know what pissed me? Oh, wait, Nicole hasn't seen it. I don't know if I should say it. I will just say it. You know what pisses me off?
I was like, I don't care.
Don't say it, because what if someone that's listening hasn't seen it yet either?
No, this is not like that big of a deal. Okay. What pisses me off is that they made it seem like they were born in like 96 or something like that. I'm like, okay, y'all, Simu and Awkwafina are not that young. I'm not saying like a bad thing. I think it's like, I respect them because they're older. And I kind of was like,
respect your elders.
Yeah, I know, right? I was like, why are we making them like 25? Okay, they're not 25. I'm sorry. Like, why can't we have freaking superheroes who are in their 30s? I'm just saying. I'm just saying. I don't know if we've talked about this. Have we talked about Eugene on the Try Guys? Sorry, but like, okay, because I was like,
I was like, you have talked about, you guys have both talked about.
I was going to say, we talk about him when I went to Pflugerville.
No, I meant like how he's not really in many videos. Try Guy videos. Oh, can you notice that?
Yeah, I have. What the heck is up with that? I thought he was just like getting too famous,
too I know, busy. Right? I don't know. Maybe it's like, I wonder if it's kind of like Pentatonics. Do you know them?
Mm-hmm.
And how, what's his name? Scott and Mitch. You know, sometimes they do their own
thing. Oh, yeah, how they have their own thing. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe Eugene is like, I'm still with the Try Guys, but I also do this thing too. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I thought maybe.
That's how it all starts.
No, I thought you had the answer when you started that. I thought you were going to tell me why, and then you just disappointed me. So
I do not have the answer.
You're okay. Like, I was actually asking in case.
Yeah, I was kind of bringing it up, hoping you had the answer.
No.
I Googled it once, and they said that it was mentioned in one of the podcast episodes. I'm like, I'm not going to go through every podcast to like. Yeah,
they couldn't just insert the clip from the podcast episode that they talked about it in. That's
people are lazy, like me.
Same. But yeah, so in today's episode, we will be discussing the history behind the movie Cinderella Man. During the Great Depression, ex-boxer James J. Braddock works as a day laborer until his former manager, Joe Gould, offers him a one-time slot against a rising young contender. After he wins a shocking upset, Braddock goes back into the ring full-time against the wishes of his frightened wife, May. Dubbed the Cinderella Man for his rags-to-riches story, Braddock sets his sights on the defending champion, the fearsome Max Baer. So what'd you guys think?
I liked it, surprisingly enough. I thought it was going to be boring, but it was actually... I thought
it was boring.
Oh, really? Wow.
I liked it, too. So, two against one.
We're right. You're wrong. Why didn't you like it, Lisa?
Because it was boring. I didn't really understand the whole point. No, it was important. I was just kind of like, I don't know why there's a movie about this.
Because it has to be a movie about everything.
Yeah, it's a rigid story. It's inspiring.
And it's a piece of history. Or
the people in the Great Depression. History.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody was at their lowest. I think he's a great. And this guy came out from the slums.
I agree. I think he's a great person. I love like the story. I just was like, I just couldn't connect to it. I guess I couldn't connect. That's no fair. Relationship between me and the movie. I thought it took too long for them to explain the title. Like I was like, obviously 3/4 of the movie, I'm like, I still don't understand why it's called Cinderella Man. And then they finally explained it, and I was like, oh my God, okay.
I don't know. I thought it was kind of interesting because I feel like I don't know. There's still quite a few movies on my list that I just haven't watched yet, but I feel like a lot of historical movies and like movies about like New York and stuff don't really depict the Great Depression and what are they called? Hoovervilles?
Bills, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. I feel like it's like kind of a subject that movies don't really touch on. So I thought it was kind of interesting to see depicted.
It's depressing.
Well, yeah. But I feel so like there are so many movies that like take place in this like time period and kind of just like gloss over it.
Yeah. So they don't mention it at all. And I was like, the only other movie I can think of is what is it? The Grapes of Wrath. Also based off of the book, The Grapes of Wrath. Now that's boring.
Read it.
If you want to talk about boring, now that's boring.
Okay. I was thinking of I was thinking of that movie with Leonardo DiCaprio and Johnny Depp.
Big Gatsby.
No, what's eating? What's some?
What's it's like one Gilder, of Lee, Gilbert yeah, Grape.
There you
go. Was that during the Great Depression?
No.
So.
Oh, what are you talking about?
Well, you said grape, and the only other movie I know with the word grape in it is that movie. So I was like, maybe it is set in the Great Depression. I don't really remember.
So. Oh my goodness. I like the music. I recognize it right away as Thomas Newman and one of my favorite composers. He does.
I remember the music.
Yeah, I was like, it's not Simple movies. Plan. I don't know.
Did it sound like Finding Nemo? Did it sound like Wall-E?
I have watched this movie before. I don't know if you guys have watched it, but
no, I've never seen it. Honestly, yeah. I was on the edge of my seat. I didn't know if he was gonna die or not.
I really enjoyed
anything
too.
About this guy.
I feel like a lot of the movies we watch are movies I watched when I was younger and like maybe wasn't like fully invested in the movie like as a kid, you know. But watching it again, like as adult, like you said, I was like very captivated by it. And I wanted to say, did they have the little blurbs at the end of the movie for you, Alex?
Yes.
I was like, ooh, now the next movie has it too, by the way. Just so good. Mm-hmm. That's for you to look forward to, a little light at the end of the tunnel.
Yay.
Yes. It is the best part. It's my favorite part too.
It was kind of hard to really find anything. If you like go to his Wikipedia page, it's very short. Like
it is
not much. So I was kind of surprised that this was even a movie because I was just like, who is this guy? I mean, I'm obviously not a boxing fan, so I don't know anything about anything, but just the fact that there really wasn't much info on him online, I was just like, how did they make this movie? But luckily he has his own website that has like pretty much everything you'd ever need to know about him. In the website is curated by his, oh my gosh, his grandson James, and the cousin John. So it's actually his family members that curate the website. James J. Braddock was born on June 7th, 1905, to Irish immigrant parents Joseph Braddock and Elizabeth O'Toole Braddock in a tiny apartment on West 48th Street in New York City. The Braddock family was growing, and with five boys and two girls, Joseph and Elizabeth relocated across the Hudson River to the peaceful township of West New York in Hudson County, New Jersey. Like most kids, Jimmy enjoyed playing marbles, baseball, and hanging around the old swimming hole on the edge of the Hudson River or under the Hackensack River Bridge, while he dreamt of someday becoming a fireman or a train engineer. From around the year 1919 to 1923, Jim Braddock worked a series of jobs: a messenger boy for Western Union, a printer's devil, which I'm not exactly, I'm assuming that's like at the newspaper, a teamster, and an errand boy in a silk mill. It was during this time that Jimmy discovered his passion for boxing. Braddock spent a few years honing his skills as a successful amateur fighter throughout New Jersey, and in 1926 entered the professional boxing circuit in the light heavyweight division. During his first year, Braddock overwhelmed the competition, knocking out opponent after opponent in the early rounds of most fights. As a top light,
I know, light, let's say the name.
Yeah. As a top light heavyweight, Braddock thought of moving into the heavyweight class. Problem was that although he stood over 6'2", he seldom weighed over 180 pounds. But even with his trim physique, Jim's powerful right hand was no match for even those opponents that weighed close to 220 pounds. On the evening of July 18th, 1929, Braddock entered the ring in Yankee Stadium to face Tommy Loughran. For the coveted light heavyweight championship. Loughran, who had studied Braddock's boxing style, knew about Jim's powerful right hand and spent the match ducking and dodging Jim's punches. Braddock would never land a clean hard punch and lost the 15-round bout to a decision, which, like I said, I don't know anything about boxing. I didn't realize that, like, there's, like, a table of judges, I guess, that, like, decide who fought better if they kind of just come to a tie at the end.
Yeah, I don't get that. I know that boxing does that, but...
No, it's points.
Yeah, but, like...
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but that's who the people
they have
are...
to fight. Yeah.
There are people there, though. I don't know how they do, but I think they have to, like, count how many, like, punches land and shit. I'm like, how do you do that though? Yeah, like, I don't,
it's not, I think it's not just punches, but I think it's also like when you dodge them or something, it's like there's like a point system. I don't know it very well either. I think it was the last, like, Mayweather. Mm-hmm. Is it okay?
That's a person. Yeah,
I don't know. Is it Mayweather or is it Mayflower? Sorry,
Mayweather.
Mayflower.
I mean, that's the only other May thing I know, but Mayweather, when I watched that fight, like, you know, I was with Luis and he kind of gave me a little bit of a rundown about how the fight, it's not about like how many knockouts or anything. Like, sometimes you could just win because of like having more points. So that's the only other thing. That's the only thing I know about boxing.
Yeah, I thought you would just try to punch the other guy out, and when he gets knocked out, like, that's it. I thought it always kind of ends in a knockout, but apparently not.
It's more technical.
Yeah. On September 3rd, 1929, less than 2 months after the Loughran bout, the stock market crashed and the nation plunged into the Great Depression. As the banks went under, Braddock, like so many other millions of Americans, lost everything. His investments were wiped out in the crash. So I tried to find, because he says in the movie that he had a lot of investments in a taxi cab company, which is like cabs in New York, like who could go wrong type of a thing. But I couldn't really find anything more about it, like if that was even really what he had investments in. I know that the writers of this movie worked really closely with his family, so I'm assuming that there is some weight to what he said, but I really couldn't find what all his investments were in or how much he lost or anything. But just like the fact that, which I was thinking, sorry, side note, sort of, when we were talking, gosh, what was it? I can't remember. I think we were just talking, I think it was one of the episodes that was just Lisa and I, we were talking about the conversion of money, you know, whenever the time period was to inflation. Mm-hmm. And I thought that this was one of the times where they actually like had the inflated amount, because he said something about like, he got like $8,000 or something like that in the beginning. And I'm like, that's a lot of money. But like, when was that $8,000? But then later in the movie, when they're talking, when he's like, when they're depressed and talking about how the, oh, they're 3 months behind with the electricity bill and it's going to be $44. And so I'm like, dang, $8,000 in the 1920s. That's a lot of money. Cause I was like trying to figure it out. I didn't mm-hmm. look up exactly what it was, cause I can't remember what year it was supposed to be, but I couldn't figure out if they had actually done the math on that, or if they're talking about that time period money. But thinking back now, I'm just like, dang, that's a lot of money for a freaking fight. Like, they were living mm-hmm. well and then not living well yeah, at all.
Totally. Yeah.
With no work available, Jim struggled to win fights so that he could put food on the table for his wife and three young children. However, along with the economy, Jim's fight career hit the skids as well. He lost 16 out of 22 fights, during which time he shattered his right hand, landing a punch. At the bottom of the barrel, Jim swallowed his pride, hung up his boxing gloves, and filed for government relief to support his family. I thought that was interesting how, like, embarrassing, I guess it was.
I was going to say the same thing. Assistance. Yeah.
It's like, there are people that are mooching the system just to live every day. And the fact that yeah. he was so ashamed to get this government, like, it was crazy.
It was crazy yeah. to me to see as well, because I mean, I think because my family has worked for like the county where they help people who are on, you know, welfare or whatever. And it kind of, and they hate seeing the people who like are just taking advantage of the system. Mm-hmm. Like, it does bother them. And I think that when I needed some help, like when I needed unemployment, they were like, oh my God, Lisa, no. And I'm like, no, I freaking need this right now. Yeah. You know, like, what the heck? I shouldn't be ashamed to get this. Mm-hmm. You know, this is, yeah, this is something I need in this time. And it's not, to me, I learned that, yeah, it's nothing to be ashamed of. I don't know. I guess in that time it was.
Well, I mean, yeah. it's, I think it also had to do with the fact that he, like you said, was like doing so well. And then it's like, now he's basically just on the same level as everyone else asking for help. That moment though, when he paid it back though.
I was like, oh, I know. Give that to you. Back. Look at him.
Yeah. Nowadays we would never do that.
I feel like asking the question. They're like, okay, don't care.
I know. I didn't even know you had to pay it back. So.
Did you have to?
I don't
to?
Think you did.
No, I don't think so either.
It's just the principle.
Oh,
of the
he just
thing.
Did it. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because like, that's why it meant a back. Lot. Yeah. No, imagine if all those people had to freaking pay it back. Jeez Louise. Like, they would never get out of debt.
So, yeah, you know, like, was the depression, was it portrayed correctly in the film? Because, you know, as you said, we don't really see much of it in other films or at all. So, I mean, yeah, the Great Depression did happen. I guess, well, one thing, well, obviously it's been a while since I even learned really about the Great Depression. Obviously, like, I knew mm-hmm. about it, but I don't remember everything I was taught. But I guess I didn't realize that it was something that didn't just happen like here in the United States. It was something that kind of happened globally, but it was kind of for different reasons. Like here, I think it mainly had to do with that stock market crash of 1929, but I guess it happened for different reasons in other places, but I don't really know those reasons. I didn't look into it, unfortunately. But I do know that it probably.
I think I was going to say the same thing. I think something, I think the war had something to do with it too.
Yeah. That makes sense.
I would go with World War I.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, which one? probably the first one, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely the first one. But yeah, I would say that the portrayal of the Great Depression in the film, I think it was a little bit limited because they were kind of more showcasing it from Braddock's point of view. But I think that it was, and what they did show, I think it was accurate because it did, I feel like in the film, they made it a point to say that it wasn't just like him, obviously that was affected, but it was like everyone that was affected by it. And it just made it extremely difficult for people to find work. You know, again, as we see in the films, people are struggling to find work. They're asking everyone, you know, are they all kind of like waiting in one spot for to see if anyone will hire them for like a day's worth of work.
What about how they kind of, I felt like for a second, they did show a little bit between the, like the classism, because his manager or his trainer, mm-hmm. you know, that guy, mm-hmm. Gold or something, mm-hmm. how you remember she was like, Yes. Mm-hmm. How she was like, oh, you and your fancy apartment. I mean, he has a fancy apartment. So obviously I think him and some other people in that, and it's, I don't know, class, I guess they must have better. They must be doing better, I guess. He seemed like the only reason why he didn't have anything in his apartment, they said it was because he sold everything so he can help James.
It probably have still affected them though, just probably not as significantly as it did people who were of more working class type of thing. Cause obviously those are people that all put money into people that have, you know, all the stuff too. So I'm sure they're affected in some regard. Like, I guess multiple of the industries that were like, you know, having jobs and stuff like that, they just like came to a complete stop. Like one day they were like an active job or place, what is it? I don't know, industry, I guess. And then the next day they just were like completely like they're done. And I guess people, obviously we already know this too, but people would travel from far distances. So mainly it was men. There were times where women would go too, but men would travel in far distances from their families to look out these jobs. And then they would also like have things like signs on their themselves that said like, oh, I know how to do X, Y, and Z, like hire me for a job, or, you know, just all basically advertising what their skill set so that they could try and find work. And then they would also go to, what is it, like the financial assistance thing. They would do a lot of that. There were a lot of people in line. I saw many pictures of long lines of people looking for jobs, you know, men, as I said, already having signs all over them, trying to advertise their capabilities.
And they like sell their kids too. I feel like I've seen photos from then of like a mother like trying to sell her kids or something.
Yeah,
like
where have I seen that photo too? I think I was just thinking about that. And she was covering her face because she was ashamed Okay.
Yeah, there was kids too that would kind of go around and like try and help their family, their dad or whoever trying to find a job. I don't know. There was just a lot of depression going around from people because they couldn't find work for their families and stuff. But yes, yeah, so now about those Hoovervilles that we talked about. I didn't even realize this was a thing until the film because I was like, what the hell is a Hooverville?
I know.
I think like the one thing that I have heard of.
Really? Oh, okay. Because I was like, when I was watching, I was like, what the hell is a Hooverville? Like, I know I've heard of it, but I guess I didn't really like
remember
anything. Well, yeah, I guess that's true too.
I was like, Hooverville? That sounds like the place from The Grinch. Does it not?
That's Hooverville.
Oh, my goodness.
That's Hooverville. Yeah, that is close. But yeah, I mean, that obviously is something that kind of piqued my interest because I hadn't really heard of it before, or I guess I just didn't remember if I had heard of it before. Because basically these were, I mean, I guess I can call them like almost like a ghetto of people who were homeless people, and they would basically like congregate all together and they like made makeshift like homes and like almost like little towns of like cardboard and whatever they could put together to create a house. Alec already said it was named after the president at the time, which was Herbert Hoover. And yeah, these were okay. One thing that was kind of, I guess, interesting, I guess, I don't know. I feel like it's kind of wrong to say something about the way like the people were living like this. They're interesting. But anyways, I guess it was, well, one, they were all, there was some that were right outside on the outskirts of like big cities, but they were all varied in sizes. There were some that were extremely large Hoovervilles. And then there were some that were kind of more on the smaller side. And then I was also found interesting is that they didn't necessarily have their own government, but some of them were run with like kind of like their own little governments where they would have people who were like the lead person in their group. And if they needed to like speak on behalf of something, they had that one person to go out and do that. And they kind of spoke on behalf of.
Is it like jail? How they have like a person that they like just. You know what I'm talking about? I'm just saying, you know, in jail.
I mean, I guess
they have like a person who they kind of like promote to like.
Yeah, I guess that's I think that's how it would be better. Okay. Like Alex said, like more like a union.
A union.
They weren't all run like that though. They were just some of them had these people. And then obviously some were kind of more on the dangerous side than others. So, you know, in the film, how they showed that one guy, I forgot his name,
Mike.
Who was in.
Mike, I know I was like
was in the Hooverville, but I couldn't figure out what the hell, because you know they were like protesting or whatever. I couldn't figure out what the hell they were protesting about.
I was just about to ask if you guys put two and two together of how he died and like what.
Dude,
was going
I do
on
not
that
know.
Scene.
I had to look
I don't
it up.
Even know.
Yeah, I had to look it up because I was like, that's why I was like, oh, I need to look up what was going on in these Hoovervilles because I want to know. Well, I mean, I think there were a lot of protests because obviously they were upset and with their conditions, but there wasn't any specific one that was like, because I just thought maybe there was one that was like the major one that happened and I couldn't find anything about that. And then, like you said, I was trying to figure out how the hell he died, but apparently I looked it up online. Yeah, so more like
because there was some sort of accident.
Well, no, it said in the thing that I found online said that he died because they were, it was during a protest, but I guess that like a police officer like shot him or something like that, something with like the police and them like having some type of confrontation. But I'm like, how did the person who wrote that know that's actually what happened? But I think it might have been from like through the script, you know, how like scripts have like little tidbits sometimes in between, like kind of what's going on. I'm assuming that's what it was, but I could not figure out what the hell one that you said he died from. And then what the hell they were protesting. Like, I mean, I know what they're protesting, but I mean, like specifically in that scene.
Yeah, I thought like he got like ran over or something. He was laying on the ground and there was like that thing on fire. Like, I was just like, what happened to him? I don't know. Yeah. So I was like surprised when he died because I didn't know what was going on.
I don't know why I was thinking the whole time, like, man, he found him quick. It was, you know, it just seemed like a very chaotic yet.
Well, I mean, in the film, they do make it seem, I feel like, a lot more, what is it? What's the word? Like someplace you don't, well, obviously you don't want to live there, but I feel like they made it seem very like rugged and like it's scary to live there. And I don't think they were all necessarily like that. There were some, of course, that were like that, but I think overall it was just a place for people to live for the time being, since they literally had nowhere else to go. And this was kind of more of like their last resort to kind of find a place to live.
Where you don't get jobs there?
No, no. It's just like a place to live, basically. You know how like you see homeless people on the sides, like they have little shacks that they create. Like, it was basically that.
Sorry. I thought that because in the movie they said that he went, I thought he went there for a job or something because he got fired.
I think he went there to be like on the, because he's depressed and he's just living on the outskirts of life, basically.
He's looking for trouble.
Yeah, but I don't think that portrayal of what like the Hoovervilles is accurate, because these are just places people needed to live, so that's where they had to go, you know, because they were kicked out of their homes and stuff.
I thought that was so smart. The part where the wife and the kids were like taking the lattice off of that billboard for the fire. I'm like, cause it's like, you see stuff like that, like decorative crap like that. And it's like literally just decorative and it's no purpose, but like it needed to serve a purpose to keep them warm. I'm like, that's smart. They're just like taking this freaking lattice because it's just chilling there. It doesn't mean anything. Like, just take it and burn it.
I think too, randomly, cause you're talking about that, I can't remember if this is something I read, but that how his kids were sent away for like a bit or something. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just with like, other relatives.
Yeah. But then they like got them back though. Like, so next we are going to be learning about how James got his second chance, which we will get right into after this short ad break.
Hi guys, welcome back. I'm going to talk about James and his second chance because I've said previously he fought until he broke his hand and he basically lost his license, so he couldn't make that extra money anymore. But he was lucky enough to get a second chance. And so what happened was that there was a fight happening between James Corn Griffin and somebody else, and that person canceled last minute, so they just need somebody to fight John. And they knew that James would do it because he wants money and everything like that, and they really needed somebody. They didn't care who it was. They actually just wanted it to be a stepping stone for John, because John is kind of like, he was getting good in his career, so they wanted him to win essentially and move on to the next round, and James was just supposed to be a person for him to fight. But plot twist, James won. And so he went on to the next round. So he went on to fight John Henry Lewis, and everyone again predicted that James was going to lose, but he won. So what happens when you win? You go to the next round. So the next round he goes up against Art Laskey and he lost. JK, he won. So won again. And it's like, so crazy because he's taking his second chance and he's turning it into a third, a fourth, a fifth, and he's really just changing the tides. You know, he's changing everything. He's changing his path, his luck. It's literally like night and day. So of course, after he defeated Laskey, his next opponent was the top heavyweight contender, Max Baer. And James, guys, he defeated him. So now James is a new heavyweight champion. And so that was just kind of like, I think it's a prime example of somebody from the slums, you know, coming out and taking that second chance and turning it into their victory. Mm-hmm. So did that inspire hope? Well, bitches, of course it did. Like, to this day, people love these types of stories. Like, just recently, I just think about, like, Suni Lee, you know, the, obviously, the Olympics, right, that happened this year. And whenever they talked about the gymnasts, a lot of times they talk about Suni Lee because her father, you know, he broke his back in 2019. She lost some family members from COVID. She kind of was this, like, underdog who was continuously like climbing her way to the top, and then she got her opportunity because Simone Biles couldn't compete that day, and she became the Olympic gold medalist. So everyone loved that story. So you can just imagine, of course, what is this like 80 years ago, they loved that story as well. And it doesn't even have to be a real person. Like, let me set the time, guys. Remember, it was a lovely, it's like now September, the season is changing, it's cooling down. We wake up one morning and we're trying to turn on our cartoons, and for whatever reason, the cartoon isn't on. It's like news everywhere. It turns out it's 9/11 and we were just attacked. And it's like the whole world changes. You don't know what's going on. 6 months later, there's this movie that comes out and it inspires hope because there's a hero in New York and his name is Spider-Man, S-P-I-D-E-R-M-A-N, Spider-Man.
What the hell?
I'm just saying, we as are humans, we love stories like this. When we're down in the dumps, if there is a way to inspire hope, we go for it. We cling on to that. Spider-Man did it. Suni Lee did it. James J. Back did it too. All right, guys.
Bam. James, Jonah, Jameson. Bring it back to Spider-Man.
I was going to say one thing that was funny, though, was bringing it back to James J. Braddock. Yeah. Was that, well, I found out reading, you know, obviously, as we do for the podcast, that I guess those guys weren't even like that. The first guy that he fought, I already forgot his name, even though Lisa just said it, but I guess
John
he wasn't.
John Corn Griffin.
Griffin. Because in the film, they made it seem like way like he was like the top dog type of thing, you know, and that James J. Braddock defeated him, but I guess, you know, it wasn't like that. As you said, Lisa, he was kind of just starting off, so he wasn't just starting off, but he was like getting his name up there,
like,
as well.
Yeah, his career was starting to like
take off or whatever. Yeah, and then James was just like, nah,
hold my cause.
But yeah, and I guess even the Max Bear guy was kind of, well, I mean, he wasn't as scary, I guess, as they made it seem in the film. Like, he was,
yeah, they just really, like, made him,
but he
out
killed
to be this
two people.
I mean, yes,
but like, he still wasn't as scary. I get, not scary, but I mean, like, that's, they made him seem scary. Like, way, well, I mean, like, in the film, they made him seem like he was a big old jerk, but I guess he wasn't really like that, I guess, in real life. Or there was basically some difference, okay, that like, they didn't really portray his opponents correctly in the film.
It makes me think of that soundbite where they're like, add a little spice. And that's what they did with his character, yes, in the movie. Mm-hmm. You know, they were like, add a little spice.
Yeah.
I was reading an interview with the grandson. A lot of the family went to the premiere of the movie. And mm-hmm. I guess Howard, one of the sons, so his grandpa, his grandpa. Yeah. Said that he never remembered living that poor that they portray mm-hmm. in the movie too. So,
okay. Mm-hmm. But to me, it's like, I feel like sometimes you might not remember it that way. Maybe like your parents are able to kind of mask that a little bit, mm-hmm. you know? So I don't know. I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm just saying like.
Oh, I just looked up the inflation calculator for that $8,000 that I was talking about for that fight that he won at the beginning of the movie. Mm-hmm. And in today's money, that's around $130,000.
$8,000?
Yeah.
Holy crap. That's he won in a fight. Is that what it was?
Yeah. At the beginning of the movie, when he got his cut, that was mm-hmm. just his cut. But so that was after his cut to Paul Giamatti and to the mm-hmm. ring and all that other stuff. So still pretty decent amount of money, which kind of will bring me into what I'm going to talk about next, because with that kind of money, you could buy a house.
I was going to say, I think I read somewhere that there was something where he said he like was supposed to win $25,000. And that makes me be like, what the hell? How much is 25? Like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Look it up, Alec. Do you have the calculator still?
Yeah, I do. $25,000. Yeah, almost $400,000.
Holy nice.
After this movie ended, after the events of the movie happened, and it had the little blurbs, and after his big bear fight, he had to go on to defend his title of world champ. Were all these guys that fought America? I guess they weren't all American. So I'm like, world champion? Like that seems like a big title for these fights that all seem to take place in New York. I don't know. So during his reign as champ, Jim Braddock fought a series of exhibition fights over the next 2 years. On June 22nd, 1937, Braddock would defend and lose his heavyweight title in an 8-round KO to the Brown Bomber Joe Lewis. According to Jim, Lewis threw far more punches than Bear did. Although Jim never complained, few knew that during the fights for Lewis, Braddock actually received medication for arthritis, which I feel like they kind of mention when he's training. They're like, he's old, he's got arthritis. Jim barely lifted his left during the fight because the medicine numbed him like a muscle relaxant. Jim's only lucky punch happened in an uppercut, simply since he failed to raise his left over his head. His follow-up punch missed Lewis's chin and slammed into Joe's chest. The punch cracked around the auditorium. Only an inch short kept Jim from retaining the title. Joe Lewis worked Jim over in the subsequent rounds, adding 23 stitches and moved a tooth right through his mouthpiece and into his lip.
Was he even fighting in this fight? It's not like he was fucked up.
He had to defend his title. I don't know.
I mean, I guess, but if like you're numb and shit, like I don't know. Yeah, but yeah, anyway, sorry.
Everyone enjoyed the fight that night, and even though it was a loss, it was perhaps Braddock's best fight. Prior to the Lewis fight, Jim's manager, Joe Gold, struck up a deal that would give Braddock 10% of the gross with Lewis for the next 10 years. From 1937 to 1939, Braddock received over $150,000, a lot of money in those days, and nearly $2 million today. So that's part of the reason why he fought, because he got this deal.
Even if he was going to lose, he's going to get a good,
he's still going to get paid,
which is like how it is today with boxing. It's like, even if you lose, you're getting like hella money.
Jim Braddock was a man who wanted to go out on top. And on January 21st, 1938, after beating Tommy Farr after 10 rounds, Jimmy Braddock, the beacon of hope for millions, hung up his gloves and retired from the professional boxing game. After his retirement, Jim and manager Joe Gold enlisted in the U.S. Army in 1942, where they became first lieutenants. Before the war ended, Jim served on the island of Saipan. Upon return, he helped construct the Verrazano Bridge. Don't know where that is. I'm assuming it's in New Jersey. I don't know. And worked as a marine equipment surplus supplier, running generators and welding equipment, which they say at the end of the movie, on the same docks that he worked. Jim and his wife, May, raised three children, Jay, Howard, and Rose Marie, in a house they bought in North Bergen, New Jersey. On November 29th, 1974, after 85 fights with 51 victories, James J. Braddock died at home in his sleep. May Braddock continued to live in their North Bergen home for many years before moving to Whiting, New Jersey, where she passed away in 1985. Braddock was inducted into the Ring Boxing Hall of Fame in 1964, the Hudson County Hall of Fame in 1991, and the International Boxing Hall of Fame in 2001. The champ's son, James, or Jay, lived in Saddlebrook, New Jersey for many years with his family until passing away in 2001. He worked for the Bergen County Sheriff's Office and Local 825, working heavy construction equipment. Wife Jane passed away in 2012. Son James J. III and his daughter Kathleen survived him. James, like I said, James III runs the website with his cousin. His son Howard died in 2006, followed by his wife Elsie in 2018. Howard and Elsie have three children, Susan, Nancy, and Tim, who all have wonderful families and children of their own. And this is probably the fun fact that you were going to say. I totally recognized her, and I'm just like, I know her. But daughter Rose Marie Braddock died in 1995 and is survived by her husband, Kenny DeWitt, and daughter Rose Marie DeWitt, who played neighbor Sarah Wilson in the movie.
AKA Mike's wife.
Yeah. Mike's wife was his granddaughter. Yes. And she has gone on to be a successful actress. Mm-hmm. And I totally recognized her. And this was like one of her, I guess, like first major roles.
I was going to say, like, well, hey. It wasn't even major, really. Was it major?
Well, yeah. I mean, her first like real film.
I was going to say
it first. Actually, she was kind of a big character, honestly. I mean, she had multiple big time scenes.
I mean, yeah, but I mean, I want to
very emotion filled. All two or three that she was in.
Yeah. Do you think that they gave her like those bigger scenes because of her relation? Or do you think they like already had that written in or something?
I'm sure they probably already had those scenes written, and then she
they were like, hey, what a coincidence.
Yeah, collaborating.
You're the granddaughter.
Yeah.
Like, but that is cool that she was in the film, and I don't know, I guess that family just likes being in the entertainment business.
You know what I just realized? I think I kind of remember some of the rule, like that we were talking about earlier with the points and stuff. Is from that movie. Did you guys watch Southpaw? I think it's what
I
it's
did.
Called. Yeah, I
that's
think
what we should have watched. Just kidding.
Is it based on history?
Phenomena.
We can watch it.
Oh yeah, that song.
Oh my god. But, JC and I always reference that and yell that at each other.
Because don't you remember like when he was training, because the what's his name? I almost called him Jake Paul. It's not, it's Jake Gyllenhaal.
How dare you?
Sorry.
I'm offended.
Yeah.
But Jake, because in that movie, you remember how he was kind of more of an aggressive fighter. Like he just wanted to give the punches, but then the coach was like, no, you have to also learn like the defense and whatever. So that's also what I was thinking about when it came to like the points and the rules and boxing, the technicality.
Well, yeah. And like I learned today, actually, because I don't know if you guys know this, but I am me and Chase are in this like boxing like it's just like classes, like it's not like actually trying to box or anything. I went today and he was saying, what was he saying? Something about like basically like kind of like what you're saying. He said like you have to like learn how to use your body in ways to where you're not using like your bigger muscles. So he was like saying, oh, when you're doing like a certain move, you don't want to, he's like, you just barely want to do it. You don't want to do the full like thing, because then you're going to be tiring out your like whatever muscles in your body. And those are large muscles. And if you do that all the time, then you're going to get tired faster, basically. And I'm like, okay, yeah, totally. But I'm like, this isn't serious, this is just a class, guy. Like, just a workout class.
15 like, rounds.
I'm like, it's only a workout class, but sometimes they do take a little too like act like we're gonna actually try and box or something after this. I'm like, I'm just trying to work out here, like calm down.
but that's like that's the other thing, is that sometimes you want to tire out your opponent so they can knock them out. But I was gonna say,
Nicole, crazy that they would go 15 rounds.
That is
like,
so
how the
long.
Heck is one not like dead on the ground right now?
Exactly.
But Nicole, Luis was talking to me about Nate Diaz. You know who he is?
Mm-hmm.
Because I guess he was listening to an interview with him, and Nate Diaz basically, I like. Do you know who he is? He's some fighter. I don't know. What is it?
I assume.
UFC. Okay. UFC. He's a UFC fighter.
And I don't know. Is it boxing? Oh, yeah. UFC. UFC.
I'm
like, is it boxing? Right. I can't remember.
Yeah. And because Luis is like, you know, Nick and Nate Diaz. I'm like, they're from Stockton, right? So anyways, basically they were doing an interview with Nate Diaz, and he basically said he like hates fighting. He hates it so much because he knows he's good at it, but it's just the fact that like, why do I want to go out there and fight and beat somebody up when they did nothing to me? Like, I have no reason to fight them.
Well, then why did he fucking pursue that as a career?
Well, because of money. Like, obviously, he was like, in the beginning, it was like for money because I needed it, da da da. And then I guess he stopped for a really long time. And then he recently got back into it because of all the sponsorships and everyone just like,
which one is this one again? Is that Nick?
Older brother?
Nick,
no,
right?
Or Nate? No, I'm talking about Nate, the older brother. They even asked, they're like, why are you even back here if you hate fighting? He's like, well, I don't want to look back in at it and say like, maybe I should have done it, you know, maybe I should have fought and whatever. So he's like, all right, I'm just going to do it this time. I don't know what his plan is. It was kind of a weird interview where he's like, I hate fighting. And they're like, then why are you doing? He's like, he literally was like took a long ass pause like that. You're like,
thanks for joining us this week on the Internet Historians. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and give us a rating. We would also love to connect with you, so give us a follow on Instagram and subscribe to us on YouTube. Next week, we will be discussing Mary Temple Grandin from the movie Temple Grandin. So don't forget to tune in. Thanks again, and we will see you next week.
Bye.